Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome one and all to Trisha's True Crime Radio. It is the last show for the year 2012, and we have a sponsor. An anonymous person said, hey, I want to pay for the sponsorship of your show, and here's what I want to have in that sponsorship. It's a great organization called Canines with a Cause. Canines with a Cause is a nonprofit organization with the mission of helping shelter dogs find homes by training them to work as companion, therapy, and service dogs for veterans in need. A lot of veterans are coming back with post-traumatic stress disorder. They team them up with rescue dogs. These dogs are rescued, and both of them get something out of the relationship. It's a very incredible program. Check out their website at www.caninewithacause.com. Okay, we're going to review a little bit in the year 2012, and we'll get to reviewing that in a little bit. But first of all, I want to talk about Susan Powell. The Cox family has just been through so much this year. It's just, it's almost too much to bear. I mean, not just this year, but since 2009. First, the disappearance of their daughter on a cold winter night in December 2009. The murder of their grandchildren by Josh Powell, Susan's husband, and the man believed to have killed Susan, and then he hit her body. We know that. This year, we find out that Josh's father, Stephen, had something like 4,500 in a folder, 4,500 pictures in a folder on his computer dedicated to Susan, some of them sexually explicit. All of them taken without Susan's knowledge. She had no idea. Well, maybe she did have an idea what a creep and pervert this guy was, which is one of the reasons why she wanted to leave Josh. And it's absolutely appalling. And to think that Susan's family has to continue to deal with all of this crap. Now, in my opinion, Stephen Powell is the puppet master here. His son Josh did whatever daddy told him to do, and I believe he is directly involved in Susan's disappearance. We'll have more on that in just a moment. But first, let me tell you something that was found here. Okay, this is according to, I believe, the Associated Press. And let me get to it. Kimster's not here, so if there's any mistakes, it's absolutely her fault, because I take no responsibility for my actions, as you know. Okay, here we go. Records obtained by the Associated Press under Washington State public records laws indicate, now, this is what's so frustrating, indicate that authorities made little effort to explore Stephen Powell's activities after Susan Powell disappeared in December 2009, even though her family has long suggested that he might know something about where she is. I'm sure they felt like they were on top of a mountain screaming in the wind, and nobody was listening. Nobody could hear. Now, the authorities only began the more intensive effort in April of this year after a former co-worker of Stephen Powell's said that Stephen talked about traveling to Utah in the weeks close to when she went missing. Yeah, and I understand he also called in sick the day after Susan went missing as well. So, anyway, they've just had an incredible year. They filed a lawsuit. We're going to be talking about that in just a little bit. We're waiting for Mr. Cox to call in. He did say he had an appointment or had some family obligations, and he should be calling in any minute now. Well, until then, I'll tell you what, let's talk a little bit about the year 2012. Now, the Huffington Post, one of my favorite websites, the Huffington Post and David Lohr, a friend of True Crime Radio and of Web Sleuth, well, they got together and they came up with the biggest true crime story of the year. And I agree. I'm not, now let me just say this, I am not too lazy to come up with my own number one. Well, yeah, I am too lazy to come up with it, but I just happen to agree with this, and that is the missing. There are just too many damn missing people in our society. It's just absolutely crazy. And we're going to get back to that article and the Huffington Post and David Lohr in just a moment, but I believe now we have Chuck Cox on the phone. Mr. Cox, are you there? Hello? Mr. Cox, can you hear me? Hung up. Okay, he'll probably call back here in a minute. Anyway, as I was saying, they came up with this great article. It's the number one true crime story of the year, The Missing. We have too many missing adults, too many missing kids. And these missing, they go back years and years and years. Now, just some of the names, this is a microscopic look at some of the people that either went missing this year or are still missing. Deshaud Sage Smith, Kelly Armstrong, Phoenix Coldon, Holly Bobo, Jason Jolkowski, Nico Lisi, Crystal Morrison, Tara Nichols, John Spira, Jesse Opie Ross, Sky Metawala, Dylan Redwine, Lacey Brooks, Bob Harrod, Stacey Peterson. You know what? If I sat here and read all the names of the missing, we'd be here all night and probably part of tomorrow as well. Okay, let's see if this is Mr. Cox. Mr. Cox, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Ah, here we are. Thank you for joining us. I know you have a busy day today, and I really do appreciate your time. We were just talking about the fact that the number one news story from the Huffington Post, they've declared the missing as the number one news story, and unfortunately Susan Powell is on that list. And as Mark Klass says, this is a club that no parent wants to belong to, and that is the club of a missing and or murdered child. So, Mr. Cox, I kind of reviewed over what's been happening over this year. One of the things that has just been found out is that Stephen Powell, Josh's father, who I believe is a puppeteer here, the puppeteer master, he's the guy that you know, tells him what to do. He had something like 4,500 pictures in a folder on his computer. They're all dedicated to Susan, and some of them very sexually explicit. How surprised were you at this, or is this just no surprise considering what a creep the guy is anyway?
Well, it was totally surprising to us at how deprived he was and how many pictures and things he'd taken. All we knew was that Susan was uncomfortable around him, and I know she didn't realize the depth of his sickness.
You mentioned that she was uncomfortable around him. Let's talk about Susan for a moment. I feel like I've really gotten to know her, and what a lovely, lovely person. She seems the type to me that wouldn't want to worry her parents. She wouldn't call up and say, "Mom, Dad, this guy, I got to get away from him because I'm afraid he's going to harm me or he's just so creepy." Or did she? I don't know. What did she tell you about him?
Yeah, she minimized everything for us and didn't go into any real details other than she said he made a pass at her at one time and that she was uncomfortable around him. And that was about as far as she went.
And, boy, that does sound like somebody who just cares about her parents and wants to make sure that everybody is okay at the expense of herself, and especially making sure that her children are okay. We have found out this year that a coworker of Stephen's said that he talked about going to Utah around the time that Susan went missing. You have long held the belief that he has known something or was actively involved in this, and you kept telling the authorities about it, and they just kind of blew you off, didn't they?
Well, they didn't give it the weight that I felt they should have given it. They said they did take it seriously. They did talk to him. They looked through his house one time at his just asked permission to go look through his house, and they did a cursory look around the house. But I always felt that they needed to serve a warrant and actually just look in every nook and cranny and under the crawl space and everywhere in that. I thought they needed to do a thorough investigation into his house, which they just kind of went on the surface and they didn't see anything real disturbing, so they kind of left it there is what my gut feeling is. But they claim that they had looked into it.
So what they're saying is, hey, Mr. Cox, don't worry, we've looked into it and we've got it handled. Don't you feel there's a lot of, I hate to use the word cover-up because that's just so, it's just thrown around so much, but don't you think there's a lot of covering their behinds here as they go along, kind of going along and trying to tidy things up, or am I being too harsh on the authorities in this case?
Yeah, I'm sure there is some covering up going on. I think the mistakes that were made, I think they were genuine mistakes. I think that Really, it's kind of a sad situation in the investigation, is that I feel that had they been able to, once they had looked at us and just determined that we had nothing to do with it, of course, because everyone in here was a suspect at one time, I'm sure, but then we would have seen things had they brought myself into the investigation and told them, hey, what about this? We got this tip. Is this something you think, you know, if they'd have actually brought us more into the investigation, I think we could have helped. I think they would have steered them better, but of course they don't want to be tainted by our prejudices and our feelings. They don't want that to enter into it. They want to look at everything objectively. But the problem with that is they put in their own prejudices, and objectively is never objectively. So, yeah.
Right. That must be just absolutely heart-wrenching and just makes you do flips inside of yourself, just knowing that the what-ifs. What if they would have listened to me? You know, what if they'd have brought me in the investigation? I would think, you know, and again, I love law enforcement. I do. But we need to learn from situations like this. And I would think that they would say, tell us everything you feel, because information is what they need. No matter, and there's always some minuscule little thing that you might think is small that might be huge to them. That's why I find that so surprising, that they just blew off this sick, twisted perv so quickly, and now it's come back to haunt them, right?
Yeah, well, they did say, tell us what you feel. But then But they were wanting to know what we felt, but they wouldn't share with us the information they had.
Right.
Because, and so, you know, they told us, what do you feel? And we say, yeah, he's uncomfortable. We need to look at him. Okay, yeah, we got you. We're on this. But they didn't say, oh, and we've got this bit of evidence here. Had they looked into, like we'd asked him to, where was he, get his work situation and, you know, where was he actually physically at that time? And if they determined, well, we determined that by a telephone call, I would have said, that's not good enough.
Right.
We need to make sure somebody had actually physically seen him, and where was he really? And I could have told him, no, you have to push further there.
But, exactly.
So they withheld that information from me, protecting the case, but also not giving me enough information, so I couldn't give them the insight that would help them in their investigation.
To continue forward. We're talking with Chuck Cox, Susan Powell's father, and we're talking about Stephen Powell, who is Joshua's father. Joshua was the number one suspect in Susan's disappearance. He brutally murdered Susan's two children, Mr. Cox's grandchildren, and then killed himself by blowing his house up. We all remember that horrid tragedy. And again, so many lessons learned from this tragedy. Is it true that Stephen Powell called in sick the day after Susan went missing?
Well, I've heard the same story that you have, and the co-worker claims, yes, he called in sick, and that he was, for whatever reason, so they don't know where he was, really. And given his job was one where he travels around to different schools, and he operates via cell phone. They don't know where he was, really, and that's disturbing. I guess they never heard of call forwarding.
I guess not. Mr. Cox.
Hey, come on, folks. Jeez.
Yeah, it's not that hard. I want to back up here because I don't know why this never occurred to me to find out. Where did Stephen Powell work? What did he do?
Yeah, he sold furniture for the
school district?
The state of Washington, I want to say convict, but it's not. It's corrections industries. So basically they have the convicts make furniture, and he sold the furniture that they made to schools and things. It's kind of this industrial furniture, the heavy test board with a laminate on top of it and
lead
and that kind of stuff.
Well, that's ironic, and maybe he'll be making some of his own furniture that he might maybe someday get out and sell, but hopefully not. Let's hope he's in there for a long, long time to come. Let's talk about, you have a couple, I some lawsuits going on here. Let's talk about your lawsuit against, well, I want you to tell me, who are you suing and why?
Well, we're attempting to hold the state of Washington Department of Social Health Services and child custody people responsible for their letting the visitation go on without having supervised visitation at a regular place. And basically that was based on their overall guiding principle of reunification with the biological parents as number one priority. And then number two, the child's best welfare of the child, safety of the child.
Shouldn't
and
that
so,
be the other way around? Shouldn't it be the other way around, the
exactly.
safety of the child first?
It should be the other way around. And they haven't given anybody acknowledged that in any way or decided they're going to change it. So it takes a lawsuit to get their attention, essentially.
I know you're not doing it for money, and nobody in their right mind would ever suggest that you are. You're doing it to make change, because like you said, it's the only way that they'll make change. And why they don't have a specific facility for parents to go when there's situations in the custody battle where tensions are high. There's lots of states that have just a central location where you go, you drop off your kid, the other parent is there, and there's people watching, right? That's all you're asking.
Right, and they have that here, but they decided not to have that here because Josh was such a public figure or such a, you know, where's your wife? And everybody knew that. And the situation, he didn't get along with other people and everything, so they thought it would be easier on him to let him take the kids at the private residence rather than be in this group thing because it was just disruptive to the other people trying to have their visitation.
Well, I can see it being disruptive to the other people because he's such a jerk, but who cares about what he feels? I mean, that when I just hearing that, Mr. Cox, I feel like I want to explode. I don't know. I can't imagine how you get up every day because I think I would explode. You know, I don't care. Who cares about what he feels? For goodness sake, I just, oh, my gosh. Okay. How do you survive? How are you doing? I know that's kind of a rhetorical question, but I really want to know, and our listeners and our members of Web Sleuths want to know, how are you and Mrs. Cox and the other family members doing?
Well, it's one day at a time. We're still in the middle of all this. I mean, Steve Powell, we still believe, knows where our daughter is. We're still dealing with him. And then the other situation we have to clean up the messes left behind by Josh in legally. So
what's going on?
Still going on.
What's going on with that? Isn't there some issue with the life insurance and things like that? What's happening?
Yeah, well, basically, we were aware of one life insurance policy, which we, of course, kept quiet about because we figured it was part of the police's investigation. It would come out in trial, and they would, you know, because we considered it a motive and we knew about the one that was with Beneficial Life. But then after Josh killed himself and murdered the boys, we found out he had another policy with New York Life, a much larger policy. And he had tried to arrange things so that the money would go to his brother and sister and after the death, basically. So he wanted the life insurance funds to go to his family. And we were basically sucked into that because the life insurance policy, the life insurance company said, well, he tried to change beneficiaries when he really couldn't have done it. It was really not legal for him to do so. And so that got us sucked in. So basically New York Life has initiated it's a lawsuit, but it's called an interpleader. And they said, well, since we were listed down three or four down on the second or third anyway, down on the beneficiaries of Josh and Susan are both dead, we were in line there, we would be a person. So they basically put this interpleader, which is a suit against all the people who could potentially collect the money. And that's when we found out about it. Mm-hmm. And now what we're doing is we're trying to make sure that he doesn't get away with murdering our grandchildren and then giving life insurance money to his brother and sister.
Yeah, again, another horrific thing that you're having to deal with. It just doesn't end with this family. It just seems like Stephen and Josh, their tentacles of evil just reach out and touch everybody. Stephen Pell is in prison right now. What's the status of his situation?
Well, as far as I know, he's serving 30 months, and if he has good behavior, they take a third of that off, so that cuts it down to 20 months, and then he got time served from the time he was first arrested, which means, when they say good behavior, if he's in isolation, it's pretty hard to not be have good behavior
good.
If you're in isolation.
Right.
But still, so that would be 20 months, which would put him somewhere in May, I think it is, that would be the earliest he could get out.
Oh, my God. I was hoping he was going to have to stay in there forever. There are no other charges pending against him? Nothing else that they have found that they can charge him with?
Well, not on the voyeurism charges, and that was another issue, that they refused to let anything about his stalking of Susan, that he admits to in his own journal and everything, because they said it would bias the jury too much, and Susan wasn't here to say that she didn't know about it, so Steve said that he thinks he knew about it, so that was good enough to say, well, the statute of limitation on that is out, because it's 2 years or 3 years from the time you knew about it or should have known about it to take action, and the district attorney was not willing to go after it.
So in other words, Stephen Powell benefits from what Josh did and probably what he did too by killing Susan, and now she can't testify, so he benefits from it. That doesn't make any sense. You know, I mean,
it's very frustrating when you deal with our legal system and things. It's very frustrating. Certainly the criminal has the advantage, and we didn't expect a whole lot of, you know, gratification or justice out of the system. So,
yeah, but you expected a little more than this. My gosh. I mean,
yeah.
Now, do you have a lawsuit against the West Valley Police?
No, not right now. We've considered it. We've asked for them to give us the information that they've withheld from us during this whole investigation. But they claim that they still have ongoing investigation. And when we last talked with them, which is probably about 2 weeks ago or so, they kind of told us what was going on. And we're either the most gullible people on earth or I have to agree with what they're doing. And based on the information they've shared with me, what they're doing makes sense. And and that is to find some way to find my daughter.
Yes. And you can't, I take it, you can't share any of that information, or can you?
No, well, I can't share specifically what they're doing. I will say that the police, along with myself, believe that Steve Powell knows where my daughter
yes.
is. And there has to be something that the police can do or something that will happen that will require him, you know, give him an incentive to tell where she is.
Motivate him to talk, absolutely.
There you go, motivation. There you
yes.
go.
Yes, motivation is the key here. I don't think, Mr. Cox, I have ever seen or heard about such a sleazy, evil person. You know, I used to think there wasn't really evil in the world, that just some people were bad. I've changed my mind. Stephen Powell is pure evil, and he's passed it along to some of his kids. Some of his kids have disowned him. Some of them haven't, and that's the scary thing. So what's next? I guess you just have to sit and wait, or is there something that we can do to help? What's next?
Well, basically, we're sitting and waiting. The only hope we have is that Steve can become motivated to tell us where Susan is, or that someone will discover her by accident, or, you know, something like that, where we'll find her. And so it's for us, it's just sit and wait for this legal stuff to get all hashed out and things happening. And I think that's all there is. Wait, hope, pray, don't give up.
Well, Mr. Cox, you know, and I'll repeat this every day, you have basically the world behind you, people from all over the world praying for you and are there with you and your family in spirit. And we're hoping and praying that you get some resolution into this horrible nightmare and that you can bring Susan home to her family. If there's ever anything that I can do on Web Sleuths or that anybody else can do, please do not hesitate to call, Mr. Cox, okay?
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you. And let's hope and pray that the new year brings you some answers that you so deserve. And give our best to your family, please, okay?
Sure, sure.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Oh, Chuck Cox, what an amazing, incredible man. And speaking of amazing and incredible men, Mark Klass, how are you?
You're too kind. I'm well, Tricia. How are you?
I am fine. I'm not too kind. I'm just telling the truth, man. You are amazing and incredible and funny and all of those great, incredible, awesome things. I'm going to see how many times I can say incredible tonight. That's my goal. Okay, Mark, 2013. Now, we have some things, you have some things going on, and we can't really, first of all, I'm talking with Mark Klass, the director, CEO, head of the Klass Kids Foundation. Mark has dedicated his life to making sure that our children stay safe after his daughter, Polly, was kidnapped and murdered. Now, you have some things coming up, but I want to talk about Polly first, because so often, well, most of the time, we don't really get to hear a lot about Polly. Now, her 32nd birthday is coming up. Tell me about Polly. Tell me about her,
well,
what
yeah.
she was like.
Sure. Well, she was, you know what, I mean, every dad adores his little girl, and we all tend to live vicariously through our children in certain ways, and we have hopes and aspirations for them, and I was no different from anybody else. I mean, she was a very pretty child. She was a funny girl. She was a smart girl. She had a huge sense of responsibility, and we used to look upon Polly as sort of an old soul. She just seemed to carry some wisdom beyond her years. Like I said, she had a great sense of responsibility, particularly for her mother, and was just starting to come into her own as a person. She was 12, going on 13, starting to understand the potential of her own life and the value of her own life, and I think was overcoming her shyness and really trying to find, you know, sort of her path to relevance in the universe. I can say for certainty that she was absolutely amazing at performing arts.
Really?
She could read a script cold and pull in all of the emotional intonations that one would expect out of somebody with much, much more experience. I think if she had one specific talent that really stood out, that's probably the one that I would point to. She was in school theater. She was belonged to a children's theater company in her community, and she was just a joy to be around. She made the world a better place. She made the room a better room. She made the person whose hands she was holding at a given moment a better person.
I also heard that she did imitations. Is that right? That were really funny.
Well, yeah, she was funny, and she did do imitations. And it was always, you know, with the best of intentions and tongue in cheek and doing imitations of people without, you know, going on the dark side, without doing something that might embarrass somebody.
Or hurt somebody.
Yeah. It was always sort of a tongue in cheek kind of an approach that she took. She was a delight in the world.
Well, you are a proud father, and she had a wonderful father, and you continue to make her proud in her name with all the work you do with the Klass Kids Foundation. Now, Polly's birthday, she would have been 32. That's so hard to believe. 32 this Thursday, January 3rd. And you're going to be having a press conference at the Sierra Lamar Search Center, correct?
That's absolutely correct. We are, yeah. what we always said, Trish, is we've always said that, you know, we want to create a legacy in Polly's name that will be protective of children for generations to come. And really, 20 years is a generational mark. And we're really moving into yet another generation at this point. So, you know, I think we've done a fair job of keeping our word at accomplishing that goal, at least.
Mm-hmm. And so I know we can't, you can't go into exactly what's going to happen on Thursday, but it's going to be some pretty exciting stuff. And you're right, it will do Polly's legacy proud, because it will be amazing. You will have accomplished so much. You will accomplish so much in the year 2013. It is going to be an amazing year for the Class Kids Foundation. Now, you guys take donations. How can you donate? Can we go to your website?
Well, can I talk a little bit about it? I mean, I'd like to give you a little bit of my rationale behind, or our rationale behind, the reasons that we're doing this. And really what we're looking towards is a more personalized approach to child safety, a more grassroots approach to child safety, and a more technological approach to child safety. And we're doing that because, quite frankly, Tricia, you see trends in life, and I think one of the trends we're seeing is that government, it doesn't take much to be able to figure this out, but one of the trends we're seeing is that, you know, government is not really accountable to people any longer.
Well,
and
true.
Particularly in the criminal justice realm, we're finding that that government is becoming incredibly soft on crime, and they're using financial arguments to reach these conclusions that we have too many people in our prisons, therefore we should be putting people back out onto the streets before they serve their sentences, which then sends a message to anybody else that might commit a crime that you can really get away with crime in the United States, mm-hmm. because nobody's getting prison sentences any longer. And, you know, we work very hard for things like Megan's Law, for things like truth in sentencing, for things like the Amber Alert. And what we're seeing is that a lot of those laws are falling by the wayside.
Mm-hmm.
Let me give you a really good example. California passed the three strikes and you're out law in 1994, largely in response to what happened to my daughter.
Yes.
And as a result of that, crime was cut in half. Or not as a result of that, but I think that was a contributing factor.
It was a big part, sure.
Crime was cut in half in California, so you're 50% less likely today to be the victim of a violent crime than you were when that law, the year before that law was passed. However, the citizens of California, because of a cleverly worded proposition, have decided to modify three strikes to the point that it's no longer going to be relevant or operable.
So that
we won't have penalty enhancements, so that these guys that are committing these crimes are going to realize that there is no more three strikes and you're out, so you're not going to have 25 years tacked on to what otherwise might be a minor crime, and that's going to lead to more crime.
Sure.
There's no question about that at all. In California, they're putting tens of thousands of people back out onto the streets, people that are supposedly nonviolent, non-serious, non-sexual criminals. And what these people are doing is they're committing violent, serious sexual crimes in
mm-hmm.
large numbers. The crime is going up significantly. But in response to that, instead of, again, trying to get hard on crime, they're finding even more ways to let people out. So the point is that we can't expect government to keep us safe in the current environment.
Mm-hmm.
They seem to have lost their way with public safety.
Yes,
and
they certainly have.
Therefore, we need to find ways to help keep people safe. Now, there's a lot of things out there, a lot of technological so-called solutions out there to do that. They come in a variety of shapes, sizes, and forms, and go from costing nothing to costing hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars.
Mm-hmm.
And I think people are lost as to what are the ones that they should be paying attention to. What are the true solutions to child safety as it applies to children that are snatched or keeping children from being snatched or otherwise exploited either by predators or in the marketplace.
Right.
So what we've been doing for the past year is working with a variety of vendors to develop some solutions. And that's what we're going to be talking about this coming Thursday, a variety of solutions that we have worked on in the Class Kids Foundation with some very savvy tech people to ensure that the products on the market do have a stamp of approval, that we think, and we believe we have credibility on this issue, that we at Class Kids have helped to develop and believe are very good solutions, that none of them will do everything, but each and every one of them will take a step towards creating a safer society for kids.
And like you said, we can't depend on the government anymore, so this is going to be a way. You're going to be announcing ways for parents to take back their children's safety and keep them as safe as possible with these products that you'll be talking about. It is going to be absolutely an amazing thing. And I know you've been working on it a long time. Have you been working on it several years at least? Seems like it's been a while that you've been working on some of these ideas.
Yeah, actually, we have definitely been working for more than a year on a couple of these things, and along with that, we're going to have our new webpage.
Oh yes, we can talk about that.
We're going to reintroduce the Class Kids webpage with a whole new look, a whole new a bunch of content, updating it for the current times, and giving people much greater maneuverability in and around our website. So it's all going to be really, really cool, Tricia.
It is. I know it is. And anything to do with you, Mark, here's the thing I know about you, Mark. I know, well, a few things, one of them being you would not endorse something unless you are absolutely sure. I mean, you're very careful when it comes to the Class Kids Foundation and where your name is attached. And I know you have vetted all of these things that you're going to talk about on Thursday thoroughly, so people can go with confidence in what you say. That's what's great about this organization, one of the many great things. So, and I'm sure you tossed and turned a little bit during the development to make sure everything was right, but you're feeling really good about things, right?
I'm tossing and turning as we speak, Tricia.
Well, that's
true. I'll be tossing and turning until we get past this thing on Thursday. Believe me.
Oh, it's gonna, Mark. It will go smoothly. People will be thrilled when they hear what you have come up with and you've helped develop. You are basically the idea man, the brains behind this. You know, you've hired the right people to put it all together correctly, and Thursday is going to be a great day for the Class Kids Foundation. And do you have any print-a-thons coming up around the country this year that you can talk about, or anything else happening that we want to mention to our listeners?
Well, I'll tell you, here's what I can tell you, is that our search and rescue team has done a fantastic job in very difficult inclement weather this past week to recover two boys that got lost, two young boys that got lost in the woods scouting and hiking down in a very rural part of Alabama. And it was about 4 o'clock in the morning when our mm-hmm. amazing search team was able to recover these boys and bring them in. So I think that we're ending 2012 in on a very good note, on a beautiful note.
Oh, that's
two
good.
Two little kids that otherwise might have found themselves in harm's way are in fact instead going to be home with their family celebrating the new year.
That is the type of story that we love to hear about the Class Kids search operation, because so often, more often than not, it doesn't have a happy ending. And what a great way to wrap up 2012, to bring those little boys home. Please pass along our thoughts and prayers to Brad and all of the people at the Class Kids Search Center. They work so hard. I mean, nonstop. Brad Dennis is so modest. He is the head of the search center, and he just works nonstop. So I'm sure he was just beyond delighted when the boys were found. Was he there?
Of course he was there. Yeah, he was out slogging with the rest of Nino Brad.
Oh, yeah.
Just ask anybody to do anything he won't do himself.
Boy, that is the truth, absolutely. Okay, now let's talk about raising a little bit of money for you, because you don't operate on, you know, on fumes here. You have to have money like everybody else. It is tax deductible. You are a 501c3 charity. And if somebody would like to donate to the Class Kids Foundation, how do they do that?
Well, thank you so much for asking. There are several ways to donate to the Class Kids Foundation. The easiest is to log on to our website. You can donate a vehicle to us and get a tax write-off that way. You can donate directly to us, get a tax write-off that way. You can even engage the mortgage broker. If you're selling your house and out of their money, out of the mortgage broker's money, we can achieve a bit of a tax donation as well. So we try to make it as easy as possible, and it's important to make it as easy as possible. You know, Tricia, there are very few organizations left that are involved in child safety.
Mm-hmm.
Just this year, just in the last month, the Laura Recovery Center has decided that they have to close their doors. It's
no.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know that. Oh, no.
They lost their operating costs. They no longer have the ability to operate.
That's a tragedy. That is awful. Oh, dear. Well, we can't have that happen to you guys. Absolutely not. So I've always said, if everybody listening or everyone on WebSleuth donated $5, you could have your operating cash flow for the next 20 years. So it doesn't take very much. It just takes a lot of us joining together to do so. And let's make sure that what happened to the Laura Recovery Center doesn't happen to the Class Kids Foundation. That is tragic. Have they closed down already, or is it soon?
They're not taking any new cases.
Mm-hmm.
They're referring all of their cases to us. And, I mean, you know, since 2009, they have operated in the red. We have operated in the red. And, in fact, the only organization – I think of any significance working in the nonprofit field for child safety that doesn't operate in the red is the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. And as you know, they gobble up every one of tens of millions of federal dollars.
They do.
There's nothing left for the rest of us. You know?
And what do I don't know what they do other than put up that one
either.
Page. That they
yeah,
put up one page with the kid's
either.
Picture, and that's it. I don't, you know,
as far as
I
know. Yeah.
I wish some. Yeah, I wish somebody would tell me what they do, because I haven't yet to figure it out. I could do that. I could put up a flyer with the kid's name. It's like just a big, huge database, and they get all the federal money.
Well,
I've never understood that.
Well, let me tell you. I'll tell you what. We're calling this new website Class Kids 3.0, because we built our first website in 1996. Then we revamped it totally in 2003. And now we're revamping it again, because we feel it's our responsibility to our constituents,
mm-hmm.
that we have to ensure that we're giving them the best information in a way that they can easily access it. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children has never updated their website since the mid-90s. It's the same thing that it's always been. And if anybody goes on there, even to look for missing kids, they'll see that it can take, you know, even on a really fast internet site, that can take minutes and minutes to load a page.
Oh, that's ridiculous. Yes, enough about that.
Let's talk about us.
Let's talk about the good stuff, all the good stuff. Well, you're revamping your website. I would encourage everybody to go to classkids.org. You can donate through PayPal, make it really easy. And if we all do this, then Class Kids will go on for years and years and years to come. And Thursday, the press conference is going to be at 11 a.m. Pacific time, correct?
That's exactly right, 11 a.m. Pacific time.
Okay, so be watching your local news after the press conference, because it's going to be very interesting, and you're all going to be very happy at what Mark Class and the Class Kids Foundation is doing to make sure that to keep our children safe. Mark, as always, we're here to help you. Anything you need, you know how to get in touch with me. Give Violet my love, and thank you again for joining us tonight. I really appreciate it.
Listen, Tricia, WebSleuth has always been a great friend of Class Kids. You know it, I know it, the world should know it.
Well, thank you. We'll keep the partnership up and helping each other out any way we can, okay?
All right, sweetheart. Thank you.
Thank you. Take care now. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Oh, I love that man. I just love that man. He is the best. Okay, need to catch my breath here. Anyway, great show. I, you know, without Kimster, I kind of feel naked just sitting here, and that's a really scary thought. Do not envision that if you ever want to eat again. Kimster is out. I think she's out partying, if I remember correctly. She said she was just going to go clubbing. Okay, that's not true. She's not. She's at her mom's, and she'll be back with us next week. And Kimster, we love you, so know that I miss you and that I can't do the show without you, and I'm fumbling here, but the good thing is I've picked up the fumble, and I'm moving on. Here we go. Okay, at the beginning of the show, we were talking about the big stories in crime for the year 2012. Huffington Post and our friend David Lohr have come up with a great number one, and I love that, and it is the missing. Because, like I said earlier, we have way too many missing people. That's the whole reason for the Class Kids Foundation and their search center, and they're overloaded. I mean, every day people go missing. And here's the thing you have to remember, my friends, okay? Just because a kid is a runaway doesn't mean they're not in danger. A lot of times when you hear, oh, kids run away, I'm not going to bother. You know, they ran away on purpose. They weren't taken by a maniac. They're still in danger. They're still in great danger because they're a kid on the street. So let's, you know, runaways need our help too. So do keep that in mind if you're ever asked to help in a runaway situation, okay? Okay, let's talk about some of the other crimes in the year 2012. Now, do keep in mind, I'm going to miss probably some big stories here, but I'm just going to touch on a few here that touched us. In Web Sleuth News, we saw one of our very own members convicted of first-degree murder, and we loved every second of it. Dee Dee Moore had come on to Web Sleuth to blab all over that even though she had this lottery winner's power of attorney and was spending his money, he was still alive and she didn't kill him. Then we found Abraham Shakespeare's body under a slab of cement at her boyfriend's house. And of course, Dee Dee Moore, mother of the year, did what any good psycho, crazy, and turbo overdrive bitch mother would do. She blamed her 14-year-old son for killing Abraham Shakespeare. Fortunately, Moore was convicted of first-degree murder and is serving life without parole. It is one of the few times during this case that we got a call from law enforcement to thank us, to actually say, we're reading your site and we enjoy it and you're helping us. So many people did great work on the Abraham Shakespeare case, and law enforcement was very grateful to the members of Web Sleuth. And we started an unclaimed forum where members like Rain and Nemo's mom and so many others worked day and night to try and match up identified people, but they're unclaimed, okay? So they're just people with no family members to claim them. What they do is they match them up with their family members. They have 177 matches since the unclaimed forum began this year. The resolved case number is 87, so they're doing hot. They are smoking. And we have members working just as hard in our unidentified forum on Web Sleuth. This is where they try and find the identities of the people who are missing and are dead, and then nobody knows who they are. We have people in our unidentified forum who are incredibly dedicated and very intelligent and fascinating. If you want to see some great minds at work, check out our unidentified forum on Web Sleuth. Drew Peterson, oh, Mr. Smirkface, was found guilty of killing his wife, Kathleen Salvio, and let's hope they bring charges against him for the murder of his fourth wife, Stacy. You just can't get enough of that smirk. Oof, that guy is just a creep. And finally, 2012 was the year that we finally got a big, huge, flaming hot dose of truth in the JonBenet Ramsey case. Former lead investigator for the Boulder DA in the JonBenet Ramsey case wrote a brilliant book about the case and exposed the ugly truth. James Kohler's A Foreign Faction, Who Kidnapped JonBenet, is an absolute must-read for everyone. Now, the Ramseys sue an attorney, Lynn Wood, has been very quiet. That's one thing you have to remember. Anytime anybody mentioned anything about the Ramseys, Lynn Wood was there with a lawsuit, especially when it comes to Burke. Ramsey was, or Lynn Wood was right there to sue on behalf of Burke and the Ramseys. Well, the interesting thing about Kohler's book is we find out a lot more about Burke. He's not a kid anymore. He's an adult. Some very disturbing things about JonBenet's brother, who was 9 at the time of her death. So check it out. James Kohler's A Foreign Faction Who Kidnapped JonBenet. It's the book we have been waiting for years that exposes the truth about this case. And Mary Lacey, the former DA of Boulder, should be ashamed of herself. She is a yellow-bellied coward, and she deserves to be put on a stand and cross-examined as to why she did what she did. She was negligent in her duties as a prosecutor when it came to the Ramsey case. Of course, she won't ever answer any questions about it because she knows that she looks very foolish. How about the Long Island serial killer case? Well, it's still giving people fits on Web Sleuths. We have so many great posters on that forum. We have people from all over the world watching the Long Island serial killer forum because of the minds on Web Sleuths. I'm going to let you in on just a little secret. We had people accusing their fellow posters all over the place of being the killer. Now, that's just wacky. Here's the deal. As with all of our cases, Web Sleuths is watched closely by law enforcement all over the country, all over the world. If they see anything on Web Sleuths, they will follow up on it. Okay? So, you know, yes, a killer has come and posted on Web Sleuths before. It has happened. We know of it. Dee Dee Moore. And there could be a lot more. There could be other people posting that are the killers. But it just seems like when people would get mad at each other on the serial killer forum, they'd all of a sudden that person was the serial killer. So it was pretty wacky. And just a side note, I am not the tip jar. I do appreciate you telling me your true crime tips, telling me about your neighbor is a Zodiac killer. But when you ask me what I'm going to do about it, don't be surprised if I start humming the theme from the Twilight Zone. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Okay, the mass shootings. Oh, my God. I just, thinking about it now, I get that tight feeling all over again. I don't know how we can stop it. I mean, there's so many ways, so many things that have to change to get it to stop. A better mental health system, the ability to keep these guns out of the hands of the severely mentally ill, violent people. Keep in mind, the vast majority of mentally ill people never hurt anybody, or if they do, they hurt themselves. This is such a small, minuscule amount, but the problem is they can get these handguns and these rifles, these semi-automatics that can mow people down. So it doesn't seem like it's that small of a group, but it really is. What are the answers? I don't know. I just know we have to find a way to fix it, because I don't want to be here next year in 2013 talking about the number of mass shootings. I'm done with that. We're going to stop that, okay? It was just too much this year. It really was. Let's hope and pray that 2013 is a much better year. And remember, Polly Glass's birthday is Thursday, January 3rd. She would have been 32 had not a killer got into her house during a slumber party and taken her and killed her. And Mark Glass has dedicated his life to make sure our kids are safe ever since that happened. So Thursday, on Polly's birthday, Mark is going to have a press conference to announce some unbelievable new technology that Glass Kids has helped develop and will help keep all of our kids safe. Now, do keep in mind that Canines Without a Cause is a nonprofit organization, and their mission is to help shelter dogs find homes by training them to work as companion, therapy, and service dogs for veterans in need. So in other words, Canines Without a Cause, they go and rescue dogs from the shelter, train them, and then give them to veterans returning home, especially the veterans returning home with post-traumatic stress disorder. Please check out their website, www.canine, that's C-A-N-I-N-E, canines, plural, S, with a cause, .com. The opinions on Trisha's True Crime Radio are those of the hosts and guests, and I take no responsibility for them. Trisha's True Crime Radio is a completely different and separate corporate entity from WebSleuths.com, LLC, and from ForumsForJustice.org. In other words, it's all my fault. Happy New Year, everybody. We'll see you next year with Trisha's True Crime Radio. Bye-bye.